So, as the second roundtable experiment that we're doing for the Religious Studies Project, we are gathering together today to discuss the idea of social sciences and religion. This comes from a previous presentation that a few of us at the University of Edinburgh saw a week or two ago from Callum Brown that discussed the demography of the non-religious or atheist or none category, which has sort of inspired a discussion in the future religious studies and its relationship with social sciences. This seems pertinent, as Chris will now point out.
Yeah, because we're currently recording this at the Sockwell Conference, which is the British Sociological Association's Sociology of Religion Study Group. So, Sociology of Religion, hence Sockwell Conference in Chester. And just before we get started, I think it would be pertinent, a few of us were in the last round table, but we could just introduce ourselves. I'll start and we'll go left. I am Chris Potter. I am not currently studying. I've just done a Master's by Research at the University of Edinburgh, and I do a bit of work for the Non-Religion and Secularity Research Network. And I co-host the regular podcast with David, but Matt Francis.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm Matthew Francis. I've just finished a PhD last year at the University of Leeds, and I'm now working as the Program Manager and Researcher for the Religious Literacy Leadership Project, and also to website about radicalization.
I'm Kevin Whiteside, working on a Master's of Religious Studies by Research at the University of Edinburgh, looking at 2012 millennialism.
I'm David Robinson. I'll be familiar, I'm sure, to listeners of the podcast. I'm working on religion and conspiracies.
I'm Ethan Cohen. I am studying I'm working toward a PhD at the University of Edinburgh, specifically looking at the historical identities as through the lens of Ian McEwan, or at least three texts of Ian McEwan between 1979 and 2012, specifically looking at war narratives and the identity of Britain in post-secularization and in a sort of atheistic ideology.
I'm Katie Aston. I'm a PhD doctorate candidate at Goldsmiths University, and I am researching non-religion in the UK, specifically looking at the New Humanist magazine and non-religious ritual ceremonies such as weddings.
Before we get started, Ethan, I think since you tabled the motion, can you maybe illustrate what you're referring to as social sciences and why you think there is a problem that we should address in that roundtable?
Yes, thank you for that. I appreciate your feeding me that on the platter. My issue is not so much with social science. It's essentially coming from this presentation that we saw at least last week or 2 weeks ago. Was a brilliant presentation from a scholar who has sort of evolved from discourse analysis and historical narratives, and has moved on to demography, looking at specific identities through specific data of people who essentially assign themselves particular religious identities. For me, this sort of brought up the question of the none category that comes up periodically when it comes to social sciences in studying religion. The none category basically being the box on a survey where it lists the religious identities that people can ascribe themselves to, and none is at the bottom is basically saying none, which is, for me, just extremely ambiguous and makes no real particular sense. My critique is not so much against the idea of social sciences. I hope we'll probably get into it a little bit more clearly. It's the idea that we depend so easily on assumptive reasoning when it comes to filling in blanks when it comes to our data. And I think we brought up a few questions with Callum Brown, who was presenting this, and he did a very good job of defending his research. At the same time, the ambiguous terms he was using as well as the data, one in particular, and I'm going to get the numbers wrong, and I apologize to him exclusively because I know I'm going to get the numbers wrong, and I'm sorry for that, but he had a data analysis or data graph that listed the sort of sexual practices of British students. And in looking at that, to sort of bolster his argument that women are somewhat secularizing and it's connected to the sort of sex revolution and the process of the 1960s giving women not just more rights, but this ability to be almost more like men, where the sexual promiscuity was no longer a taboo, it was something completely different. And we noticed a few of the numbers on that slide stated that roughly about 200 students were asked. Of those 200 students, the women who asked or who answered the question, specifically something about if they had had more than one sexual partner, it sort of seemed that by asking 200 students is one category in itself, and looking at the women of that category as being promiscuous because they had stated they had more than one sexual partner, essentially assumptively said that, well, this holds up my argument, this sort of is the foundation of my argument, that women, because they're more promiscuous, they're more, and I'm getting this completely incorrect, but they're more, and you can all correct me on this, which is, I'm assuming Kevin, who's laughing at me right now, will do, but that because this data set said that the 200 students asked, the women of these 200 students, presented this idea that they were a little more promiscuous, meant that all of the women in Britain were a little more promiscuous. And I have issue with that because 200 students, and of those 200 students, the women who answered this particular question does not mean all of Britain. It just means those 200 students. And it seems to me, in many ways, that when we do social sciences like this and we ask survey questions, we need to be a little more careful when it comes to our answers of what we find in the data. And at the same time, it also means to build up our argument, we're assuming a little too much. And so because of that, I've been sort of bringing this question up with a few people around New College after this presentation, essentially asking the question, can we trust social sciences when it comes to studying religion or in religious studies? Not so much in a way that's sort of critiquing social sciences that is really bad or wrong in general, because I will agree with certain people like Kevin who I've had arguments with this about for the last week or so, that social sciences, even surveys, are very pertinent and important to knowing how people practice their religion. At the same time, I'm having sort of issues with using social sciences as being the sort of end-all be-all of religious studies. Now, I don't think it's going in that direction, but I think we can at least discuss that. Building off of our last roundtable of what is the future of religious studies, which will then sort of bridge the gap to our next roundtable, which I believe is on whether we as researchers of religion are critics and caretakers. So in that aspect, I would like to pose the question, can we trust social sciences when it comes to religious studies? And is that the future of religious studies, as well as what is the opposite of that? And is that a problem in general?
I guess I just want to ask a very basic early question, which is, can we qualify what you mean in terms of social sciences? Because from my point of view, I'm an anthropologist, which falls under that category, and that doesn't include, if ever, but sometimes qualitative, quantitative mixture. And I just, yeah, whether we're talking about quantitative or qualitative research here, or whether we're talking about social sciences.
It's great that you bring up that question, because we were just having an all-out brawl at the pub about an hour ago about what is anthropology, and Kevin was yelling at us because we were arguing whether archaeology is anthropology or not, and he had this brilliant five-point plan to explain what that was. I think to answer that question, because I am not a social scientist, I tried to avoid that as much as possible when I was at Baylor because I didn't really care for social sciences. So to answer that question, I'd like to actually bring it to the rest of the group, if you all have sort of a definition of what you see as the social sciences when it comes to religion.
whilst I don't want to jeopardize other people answering that question, I do want to know why you don't see yourself as a social scientist, because that would give us quite a bit of information about what you think social science is, but maybe we should let other people offer their understandings before you say why you are not one. So what else would it?
Well, as I ask the question, I can qualify my position if you want, as an anthropologist, I suppose, my viewpoint is very much from a qualitative point of view, so participant observation is obviously a very important methodological strand of that. But I would, in terms of what you were just saying, I would think that methodologically, I don't think the aim is ever generalisation. And I think, for me, social science is the investigation of kind of human culture and life, and would not always include a generalisation. And what you just talked about sounds very outside my experience of social science, definitely. So, I guess I don't want to say too much more, but that's the basic premise.
Not too far down, but I would just come in with that. I think the two important elements there are social and science, and I think it's more the approach. We talked about this in the last roundtable of thinking, what is a scientific approach? But I think that we study social phenomena, particularly in our case, religion or things which are not religion or atheism, however you construe them. But we study these social things with a scientific mindset, and then the scientific there doesn't mean just objective, because is objectivity an achievable aim? Probably not. Objectivity, obviously, that's not necessarily an achievable goal, or maybe we could argue that it's not necessarily a goal that we want to achieve, but that's not all the scientific approach is about. It's about working systematically with data and using that data to come to conclusions. And so I think social science is simply, it's really not a simple declaration, but it's looking at social phenomena, taking evidence and working with it systematically. So I think that when we're talking about social science here, and when Ethan has his criticism, sorry, we're relating back to Ethan very much, setting it on your shoulders. But I think you're really reading into social science an extra explanatory or an extra level there of something which isn't just simply an approach to looking at the data. That would be my immediate reaction to it.
I think to sort of base my argument a little bit better, as you'll have recognized today through my presentations, I'm more of a theorist when it comes to religious studies than I am a social scientist. I think my original critique sounded a little too general, which was part of my critique in general, so that's sense. But I think if I were to point out a specific critique of social sciences that I remember from this presentation a few weeks back, is that specifically he was using the data of church attendance as a deciding factor in not necessarily promoting the secularization thesis, but promoting the idea that people are less religious because they tend not to go to church. And I think my critique of that is that I disagree with that argument, in that for me it's not so much theoretically in my mindset that the lack of church attendance means a lack of religious conviction. It just means you've stopped going to church. Now, we could find a number of ways to argue why that might be. That could be a disinterest in actually going to church. That could be, it's just not as much fun getting up on Sunday mornings. That could be a number of things that might go into the idea of just not going to church anymore. But that doesn't, for me, that doesn't mean that the people who are no longer attending service are no longer religious. And I think that's part of the assumptive reasoning that I critique about social scientists, is that we ask a question on a survey, we get an answer, and we have to fill in the space. So essentially, when we ask the question, are people religious anymore, and we look at these people have not attended church, we're essentially going from point A to point B and skipping B and C, and assuming we know what B and C means.
Well, it seems to me that you're equating social scientific research with quantitative research.
No, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with quantitative research. And I don't want to necessarily echo too much of what I said last time, but to me, the study of religion is very much a multidisciplinary and interdisciplinary approach, and to the degree that any social science approach tells us something about religion, it's useful. And we can discuss whether any given particular survey could be conducted in a better way, or we can critique a particular result, but that's very different than throwing the whole approach into question. And I think it's very constructive to say this particular survey could have been done in a different way, such that it would have analyzed the material more efficiently. But it's a question of them throwing out the baby with the bathwater or something like that.
Which is true, but at the same time, it seems like if we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and you recommend that we do it in a different way, does that not also preclude the fact that it's not being done correctly? And is there something better? And to sort of build off the original question of can we trust social sciences when it comes to studying religion, what would be the opposite? What would be the sort of counter-argument? What would be the other that we don't do that isn't a social science approach to religion?
Well, what are the alternatives?
Exactly. What are the alternatives?
Well, it's like you're saying, if you think that church attendance isn't particularly useful towards answering a particular question, you define a way such that you can answer the question that's more useful to you.
And I think, to be fair to some of the people that speak about sort of, you know, writing papers about declining church attendance, even through secularization, I would say, I think someone like David Bowes, for example, I'm sure has also published on how you can link what beliefs people have about certain subjects or values that they hold about certain things, which just seem to be indicators of religiosity, and then showing how that is also linked to church attendance. So it's not just been saying that there's a decline in people attending church, therefore there's secularization. I'm being a bit of devil's advocate there, because I'm not necessarily saying that I agree that that approach would be sufficient to tell us about religion, but there's a distinction to be made, I think, between social science or social scientific approach and a bad social scientific approach. So, you know, going from, you know, 200 respondents to a survey in which X number of women responded that they have more than social part, therefore all women are loose in today's modern society, is bad social science. It's a generalization that you can't support. Mm-hmm. And I think nobody dare say that we're going to trust the future of the study of religion to bad social science, but I'm sure that there could be a place for, you know, for social science, whether that be quantitative or qualitative. That's the important distinction to make, and it's about quantitative studies as well.
And we've had a few interviews now. We've had David Bowes, Callum Brown, and Ariella Kazan talking about large-scale quantitative stuff, and it does do very good things. I mean, whilst we, maybe in this room, we might particularly favour the qualitative approach, all you can ever say is qualitative is about a very small group that you've had the time to engage with, and you need the large scale to put it into perspective. And it's all about the healthy balance. The quantitative needs to be informed by the qualitative. The questions that you ask are informed by focus groups, by looking at qualitative engagements, and then working out what questions are the best to ask, and you try a thing, and you try again, and you try again. So whilst, yeah, a survey which says you will like, go to church or don't go to church, all that tells you is about church attendance. We can't really infer from that anymore, but it does give you good data about church attendance.
But the data is ultimately informed by the ways of thinking of the people asking the questions. As you said, it's data on church attendance. It's data on the way that we think about religion. It's the questions that the people doing the surveys choose to ask about religion. Right? So it's, do you believe in something? So it says automatically that religion is something about belief. These preconceptions are built into whenever you ask a limited set of questions.
I think they could be built into quantitative approaches as well. But again, you know, those same sort of preconceptions of the researcher or, you know, the
yeah, I actually meant quantitative, yeah, yeah, quality.
But that's a fair critique. If someone asks a question about belief and you say all that tells you about belief, and if they're trying to determine more from that, but it does tell you about belief.
Yeah, it tells you about belief.
But and if you say that's not all there is, then that's not all there is. But
yeah,
to the degree that your question is about belief, it does tell you about belief.
Absolutely. As long as that distinction is made, then yeah, it's absolutely valid. Yeah.
I think your panel today was a really good case in point, where you had Charlotte Ward's paper,
mm-hmm,
which is quantitative, and then so I would say mixed methodological approach from everyone else. And
yeah,
I think the thing that really brought up for me was where sociologists, anthropologists, social scientists can ask questions related to the question why, but it's a very different kind of answer to that question why than a quantitative. So qualitative, and, you know, you're sort of asking why in a very different way. And I think that's a really interesting thing that social science can do by actually asking that question to people in person rather than in a sort of survey. And actually the paper she gave today was very interesting for its representation of almost a third party representation of statistical analysis, which was that had a very specific agenda. It was very much about advertising to people through Google Analytics. And it gave a good broad spectrum approach, but it also sort of demonstrated some of the sort of downsides of looking at quantitative data, I think.
But just thinking about faith-based organisations, I think for one, in terms of how people are trying to sort of quantify or measure some of the work that they do, is hitting in some of these problems, is that religion isn't necessarily something which can be, or this is controversial, perhaps, isn't necessarily something that has to be quantified or can easily measured in that way. But the religion is something that's lived and eaten and worn and shaped by experiences in ways that tick boxes or telephone surveys or questionnaires perhaps will struggle to capture in many ways. And that's why, I mean, I was playing with devil's advocate earlier on, but actually I'm far more interested in what a lot of qualitative approaches have to say about religion. Personally, I think it's an absolutely amazing qualitative approaches as well, but my personal interest is in that lived experience of people, which I think that these other approaches can often miss.
And that's why I think it's important to have the multidisciplinary approaches. The qualitative brings so much, but that doesn't discount whatever bit, even if it's a little bit, that the quantitative can bring, or any other approach, is that we need to take account of anything that can say something about religion, and they can all be taken together to give us a much bigger picture.
To throw myself on the pyre somewhat, Ethan, I know that you've read my master's thesis,
hmm,
we, which I would consider to be a social scientific.
It was brilliant other than that whole part.
Thank you. So I'm wondering, to give a sort of tangible example, if you could tell me what was wrong with that approach, or if there was, something wrong there. I know there's very specifics there that we disagree on, but the approach.
You could just say, well, you said it was social scientific. What exactly did you
do? Well, that's the thing. Coming from within religious studies, it's quite difficult to place yourself in are you, what am I? At the moment, I'm thinking maybe I'm a sociologist, but I don't really know, because you study so many different approaches. So what I did was a study based on electronic questionnaires and in-depth semi-structured interviews, which I prefer to describe as social scientific, but perhaps you could describe that in some other way. But I was just wondering if we could use that as an illustration, just to, I promise I won't take anything personal.
Oh yeah, you will. Well, your study and sort of social scientist studies like this that go around asking questionnaires of identification for people, essentially looking at how people identify themselves. One of the issues that I take with surveys such as this is that you provide answers within the answers they can then check off the box. And one of my major issues that I had with this presentation a couple weeks back is the none category, is that sociologists of religion who actually apply these surveys were put in the none category, and they know what that means. While at the same time, when I asked if the none category should be reapplied as stating atheist or humanist or secular or all three of those, the response was not so much. Because, and a further issue is that within the study itself, it seems that there's the category of, you can either check a box of Christian or Muslim or Buddhist or whatever, but at the same time there's the category of Christian, non-Christian, other, which seems to make up everything else. The none box exists there because you know what that is and you want them to check off that box. If I were to critique in the same way your study, is that you apply the answers for the people who are answering the survey. You can either check the box of atheist, I'm not sure if you put atheist on there specifically, but atheist, secular, humanist, skeptic, if you can remind us all the other, I think you had
there were about 10 non-religious terms, but there were another 20 conventionally religious terms as well.
Yes, the term non-religion we'll get to another time, I'd imagine. Essentially, basically giving people an identity that they then have to ascribe themselves to. And it sort of comes down to the idea that I see how important it is to understand people in a sort of quantitative manner of how they identify themselves according to surveys. At the same time, I see the problem with giving them the answer and trying to understand religion in general on a person-by-person basis, which we can never really understand.
Can I just check, did you have another box as well?
There was a none of the above, or a fill-in, whatever you want.
So that's just forcing people to... Yeah.
And the other thing is that then, that was for the initial questionnaire, I did then do in-depth interviews. So with... one of my respondents, I call Neve, she was, I believe, an atheist, agnostic, Catholic, humanist, free thinker, secularist, something else. So, in that situation, I haven't placed her in a box. I've given her a lot of boxes. She has placed herself in boxes, and admittedly, my provision of boxes made yourself put yourself in them. But then through talking to her for 90 minutes about these issues, I get that the sarcastic thing, because the family is Catholic, she feels that she, at certain times of the year, certain times of day, depending on what's going on, she prays. At other times she doesn't. Sometimes she finds herself in the church, other times she doesn't. So I don't feel that I'm I was categorizing her maybe initially with the questionnaire, but by allowing her to explain what she meant by all of those terms that she selected, and essentially, and the next thing was that I actually, even in the questionnaire, allowed people to define what they meant by those terms. So if they selected a term, they then had to define what they meant by it. I wasn't applying academic definitions of the term to them.
Which is great for understanding what Neve believes. If, let's say, Neve is a Catholic humanist atheist, how do you define what a Catholic humanist atheist is outside of that one person's belief?
Exactly.
How does that study give us any idea of what a Catholic, a humanist, or an atheist is?
Isn't that why the tick boxes are useful in the first place? If you want to do these large, these larger scale surveys, is that, sure, these things aren't perfect, they're not saying that when somebody ticks Christian, that we all know that every kind of person's Christian is exactly the same. But it does give us something that says that at least that person identifies within the choice given and with the options of ticking other or none of the above, that, Christian is the thing that closest identifies me. And if you do that on a large scale survey, that tells us something useful about people that broadly identify themselves in their way. And you're right, it's not perfect. I mean, I'd love to go out and buy a tailored pair of trousers, but I'm not going to get it. So I'll buy the ones that are closest to my size, and that's the most economic way of actually ensuring that we get that kind of information, or I get my chances.
But at the same time, until we have a survey that studies 6 point something billion people, we'll have no idea really what that really means.
Can I just argue a point that you're seeming that you want generalizable data, but at the same time are speeding the method by which that... You seem to want to understand a generalization, but also that's not possible through the means. I mean, without actually literally speaking to every single person, that seems fairly impossible. And I would argue on top of that that you need a kind of a race approach, which would be that you would go a bit of quantitative, a bit of quantitative, a bit of quantitative, a bit of quantitative.
Which is why I would argue that we don't need to give answers necessarily. We can put forth hypothesize what something means, but we don't ever try and give an answer. In the sense that we can hypothesize, I think this is what atheist means in a particular context, but that doesn't mean because I've asked 200 people what they think atheist means, I now have the answer to what that hypothesis is. And I don't think we can really ever have answers. I think we can try and guess, and we can do studies on what we think this might mean, but having a survey asking 200 people what they think atheism means to them doesn't mean we know what that is. We can try and guess and make assumptions. Not assumptions, because that's what we're doing when we try and figure out filling in the blanks when we ask 200 people. We don't really know what their answers are. We're not making assumptions. We're essentially testing the hypothesis that I think this is what this might mean, so I'm going to look at some data, and if that's not right, then that's not right. But at the same time, I think what I'm trying to get to is that we're all basically trying to figure something out, and it's not the easiest process whatsoever.
Yeah, but aren't you better off hypothesizing if you actually go out and ask people questions than if you're just sitting around hypothesizing?
Are we getting anywhere? Are we getting anywhere by hypothesizing something means something? And if we hypothesize something means something, do we not need data to then test that hypothesis?
But how do you propose we get that data?
That's the question. Can we trust social science to do that, to provide us with that data? Or do we do it in some other way?
What do you propose?
That's what I'm asking you guys about.
sorry, this is turning into everyone against Ethan.
Yeah, I know. I'm very comfortably sitting in the chair just asking the question. I'm basically asking you guys what's the answer.
It was his question.
It was my question.
And we're not attacking you. We're just engaging with the idea and using you as the devil's advocate.
No, I was just thinking back to a comment earlier on, but just about the generalizability and you know, I mean, it's not practical just to go and ask everybody what they think. That'd be ideal, and if you could still do that in a wonderfully in-depth interview that told them exactly, so you had a really nuanced picture of what people believe, then the fact remains that once you finish the interview, that's probably going to, you know, the data's going to be out of date because people's beliefs and opinions change over time, so there isn't a perfect way of saying I can capture forever what everybody's going to think about this. And so then you go to a pragmatic way, and I'm possibly the worst person to talk about this, but in terms of sort of statistical certainties and how statisticians and that sort of branch of social science will then say, well, actually, you know, we haven't spoken to everybody, but we've spoken to a sample that is statistically significant and which we can see represents a view fairly coherently in a certain way. And again, that's not the branch of stuff that I do, so it's strange for me to be sort of defending that, but I still think that's in there, it's very valid, it's got a good place.
I do think it's valid to say that none of us in this room actually do that kind of work.
Well, none of us are statisticians here. Why are we equating social scientific methods with the statistical methods? Surely there's a lot more to social scientific methods.
Well, yeah, I think we've been bouncing that idea around for a while. Which is why I brought in my own research as well. It's not just statistical stuff, it's an approach. But the flip side of it would be,
what's the opposite of
it? Yeah, what's the alternative?
What
if it's not social scientific?
Yeah, I think it's just about labels that you mentioned earlier on, that you're wondering about whether you were a social scientist or a sociologist and I did, I probably do still do struggle with it, I just hadn't thought about it so much recently, but certainly it was an issue that I used to struggle with when, you know, people say, are you a sociologist of religion, or are you, whatever the correct phrase is for somebody who does religious studies, so easily. I know I'm not a theologian, that was quite simple. And it's kind of,
welcome to the religious studies project. This is the argument that we have.
Are
you a theologian?
That's a good point to ask a question, that if I'm allowed.
The distinctions often seem to me to be far too hard in terms of it must be either this or it must be that. Mm-hmm. You must either fall within this kind of disciplinary boundary or another. And I've never felt that I've fallen easily into any of them. So,
I wondered if we could talk a bit about why we're talking about this in the religious context, apart from the obvious that it's for the religious studies project. But aside from that, what specifically about religion creates this issue around the quantitative, qualitative problem that actually seems to be more crucial to what's being discussed? Possibly,
is it something to do with the fact that it's
belief?
Yeah,
I think large part of it is
in someone's head.
Yeah, it's the belief structure of the individual. It's the sort of belief that we can't ever really access because it's something that is very endeared to people on an individual by individual basis. And by trying to map that seems to present a bit of an ambiguous direction, essentially.
Well, at the same point, someone's sexuality, we can't, if someone, for example, were homosexual, we have to take their word for it, but there are certain actions, for instance, which, you could equate with that. To take a controversial example, but so again, with religion, again, you have to take people's word for it. You have to take their word for what their beliefs are, but there are certain ways that those beliefs are enacted.
Which then also brings us to the issue of when we do sociological surveys, how do we trust people to answer in a certain way, which always seems to come up as a problem, that when we ask survey questions, do we trust people to actually answer them properly? Or are they answering them because they want the person asking the question to think they are a certain way, or they just want to answer in a certain way?
Well, and that's something I've been trying to get you guys to look at, is there are actually ways of getting people to answer questions such that you can get beyond the biases within a survey question. So for instance, there's this woman, Mazarine Banerjee, who does research at Harvard, and she looks at biases that people have that they would not self-admit to in surveys. So for instance, one of the things she does is she gets people to do this test where she puts male and female and says left or right, and so she puts up a female name or a male name, you have to say left or right, and people do it very quickly. And then she matches, okay, now if it's a female word and a word that has to do with family, say left or say left, and if it has a male word and it has to do with career, say left or right. And people do actually do it just as quickly as if they were just categorizing male or female. But when she switches them and says, okay, now categorize male and family on the left or female and career on the right, and she starts putting out these words, it's much harder for people to categorize male with family than it is to categorize female with career. And this shows across the board, even her who created the test is not able to overcome this bias. And this is not something that people would self-report on the survey, and yet it's consistent across the board. And she can show demographics that actually the only major demographic that this changes with is age. When people are younger in the newer generations where they have more female role models, who are career oriented. And so there are ways of getting at people's genuine responses to things without the bias that they would sort of want to tick on a survey because it sounds better towards what they would think.
And some of the quantitative studies that are coming out through things like, what's that website I always harp on about? Epiphenom. They publish a lot of these things, and a lot of the data they get is from almost tricking people. You know, they're asking other questions, and they'll tell them that the study's about something else, and one group will be primed with one set of data, and the other one will be primed with. So, for instance, like images of death, for instance, one will get the same thing, but they'll be primed with images of death, the other one won't, and then they'll go, what does this have to do with religion? And yeah, it's when you take religion out of the question, but you ask religious questions, if you see what I mean, that you get these really interesting results.
Is that not priming the person answering the question to answer a question a certain way? That's bringing back the question, do we trust social sciences? But at the same time, the terms on the screen, that we can sort of go into the whole signifier issue, are placed on left and right, but they're also color-coded. They're also put in a specific way. It's not just genuinely, oh look, my computer program has just sort of done this. Is it not priming the people to answer in a certain way, to say, see, I got the actual answer from you, thus making the social scientist untrustworthy to the person answering the question?
Well, Callum Brown mentioned this, and David Boas mentioned it when I was speaking to him today as well, but you know, you can't trust people to you can't trust people to answer honestly in the way that we want them to. They might be answering honestly in the sense of they're giving you the answer they think that they should. So sometimes they'll just straight out lie, sometimes they're lying because, you know, they missed church this week. The question is, did you go to church this week? You know, they missed it because their kid was sick or whatever. But you can't expect them to give correct answers. The answers are never going to be correct.
But the same thing also brings up the issue of validity with the question. If you ask the question, did you go to church last week? And the answer is, well, honestly, no. That's where the question ends. The full answer is, well, honestly, no.
Well, it doesn't.
I had to take my kid to the hospital because he was sick. You know, that doesn't answer the question. See, on the survey question, did you go to church last week? No. Oh, well, you don't go to church anymore. They don't further ask, well, why not?
Yeah.
You just ask the Sarah question, did you do this or did you not do this? There's no further question of, well, why? And Chris said that he did actually interview participants in the survey, which is great. What does that actually provide us as a whole?
I still think I'm struggling with a massive definitional issue around social science, which is that we're talking here about qualitative and quantitative survey methods and not about social science. And actually, you are never going to generalize, and you're never going to be allowed to say big and pertinent things with social sciences, in my understanding of it, which is very qualitative, but you can get very good accounts of more nuanced understandings of what's at stake and what relates, rather than just isolating something such as religion, which seems to be what you're doing by talking about the quantitative. You can then actually start creating networks of things that map alongside religion and what's at stake. So, for example, a child being ill and not going, and what would be a good reason for not going to church, and how that's important.
Yeah, the fact that it's more important than religious to him, and it is significant.
And so very much I would trust social science, in my understanding of it, to understand religious perspectives, because you're not making these mass assumptions. In fact, you're just taking their voice, or, you know, someone's voice as being about them and their life and their understanding of their religion in that context. And I just think you're trying to equate, or from what I'm understanding of what you're saying, is that you're trying to equate a kind of generalizability with a nuanced or a more in-depth understanding of people's views.
Just slightly, in some cases, you think, I'm just wondering about the distinctions between different kinds of social science, maybe from country to country. And certainly I've heard some people say, you don't do nearly enough statistics in this country, and you need to do regardless of what social and I wonder if there is a sort of, and I don't want to bring it back to the difference between either the distinction between quantitative and qualitative. We've kind of got mired down in that, and when we think about social sciences, let's not also forget, professor of sociology and religion, Linda Woodhead has been at this conference, he doesn't do massive amounts of quantitative sociology. Grace Davey as well is a professor of sociology at Exeter, doesn't do quantitative sociology. So there's a very broad stream. Now that's sometimes seen, I think, as criticism from other countries of sociology in this country. I don't have to think it is. And I think it is much richer than just, the number counting, but maybe that's why we've got bogged down in that discussion. I don't know if that's
So before we, I really wanted to move on. You suggested when we were initially sort of abstract, that we might move on to kind of more hard, whether social scientific is leading to more hard scientific interpretation. So I know that we're going to move on to that, but in reflection of what we've been saying now about how social sciences involves much more than the caricature, perhaps, of quantitative stuff. And I think we would all agree that quantitative study is very worthwhile. It does a lot of good stuff. We're not disparaging that. But it's always the thing that anything that is large scale needs to be taken with a pinch of salt. Just like anything with a small scale needs to be taken with a, well, it's not generalizable.
It depends on the question you're asking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the pinch of salt, isn't the question.
Yeah, it's sticking true to what the purpose is or what the methods or the theory of the research will allow, actually. So, you know, if you interview 200, or if you do a survey of 200 people, then it's not a generalizable research anymore than it is if you interview sort of five people within a particular religious community. You know, it's saying these are the kind of statements I can make based on the methodology, the theoretical approach, the remits of these projects, and not then trying to say, you know, make these grand claims, which I think sometimes we're kind of almost pushed into, a bit, sort of say, you know, so what, you know, how are you going to change society, the small scale study you did it,
that's kind of interesting.
I was going to say that was actually going to be my other question when we were talking about participants being honest. Well, why should they be? You know, why should we be, have access to that knowledge? I mean, that's an ethical question as much as anything, but
why should we want them to be honest?
No, why should we get to nose around in people's business? What's at stake for us?
I suspect that actually people are incapable of being... I don't think there is a position of people that they're completely honest. I think our position in terms of our beliefs and our relation to formal belief systems, to put it that way, are far more complex than actually these social scientific methodologies are capable of capturing.
I think it's also trust. I mean, honesty comes with trust, and you have to build those relationships.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been recently in contact with a lot of people who've been doing these kind of ethnographic work, which is not something I've ever done before, but was particularly interested in. And in all of them, it's been about building trust. But there are truths and there are, relative truths. And there's, sometimes people will tell you things that they want to get out. So, the example would be in the US, if you ask people if they went to church in the last week, 80% of them will tell you that they have, but in reality 40% of them have. So, that truth is, but are these people lying, or are they, is it more or less the truth, because most weeks they would go.
Well, to be fair then, I mean, in Callum Brown's presentation, he was saying that there was more nuanced approaches to that question. You don't just ask, did you go last week? Did you go last week? Mm-hmm. Did you go in the last 2 weeks? How many times have you been in the last 3 months? And so it's obviously not perfect by any means, but you're narrowing it down more and more.
I think with all this, would we then, essentially as we transition to the sort of bridging of the previous podcast to what we hope will be the next one, should we look at the different sort of forms of social sciences that we've discussed here, and would we all agree that there needs to be a balance between sort of quantitative and qualitative research to try and make sense of anything that we try and do?
But individual scholars have sometimes, some of us like to tread that tightrope between the two. And some decide to go fully into one or the other. And I would probably think, I'm not being too ridiculous to say that if you're willing to dive into quantitative or qualitative research, you're likely to be better at it than if you just kind of walk the tightrope. So whilst we all will criticize scholars who do one or the other and be like, you're not pointing out this, you're not pointing out that, they're going to be able to do a much better job than those of us who try and walk the tightrope between both of them and try and, I guess it's that sort of thing of not wanting to offend anyone. It's like, well, if you're going to try and tread the tightrope of quantitative and qualitative, you end up in this place where you can the data you've got isn't in depth enough in either case to say anything.
Well, at the same time, in sort of needing to balance between qualitative and quantitative, should we also specifically focus on smaller research instead of the bigger picture?
No.
Some people should, others shouldn't.
Yeah. So another balance.
Yes.
And some people should translate between the two.
Yeah. You need all three. As we've seen a lot lately, relating to a presentation I'm giving next week about the relationship between religion and science.
I think it's new atheism.
Oh well, it'll be religion and new atheism. I don't know, but yeah, well, new atheism is sometimes equated with science.
Yeah.
But even if you think of just religion and science, right? There are some people who set religion and science as kind of these polar opposites, these things which are constantly engaged in conflict. And there are others who just don't understand that. It's like, why are they in conflict? And religious and they believe in science, that's fine. So you can kind of set, you know, you can imagine, let's hypothetically say that at some point, there was just, everyone just was everything. And then at one point, religion and science diverged, and then there was some people who kept religion and science, and at another point science diverged and religion diverged, and there's all sorts of things. But in the end, you need the... my point is that if you have people who really fundamentalistically believe in science, or people who are fundamentalists as far as religion goes, anti-science-wise, you need the people in the middle who are like, well, it's religion and science, to bridge the gap.
I don't know, there's something that example is about sort of two sets of people that disagree with each other totally, and I hope that there's actually much more of a conversation
in academia.
I hope there is. I know that there are some differences between them. I think sometimes maybe these come around where the role of theory comes into it, and you know, what's the relationship between the theory, you know, the theory and say the quantitative and or qualitative approach, and whether people use the theory correctly, whether they're developing new theory, or are they just generating large amounts of numbers that actually really aren't very interesting because there's no theoretical sort of, you know, perspective or engagement with that, and that's passive.
But then other people can use those numbers.
Yes,
yes.
People. If people are particularly in depth with numbers, well, generate those numbers, and then other people can use them.
There is another level as well, like neuroscience, where you just don't even ask people what they think. There's just a sense that religion is just in the brain or not, and you know, that's sort of there.
That's a direction you wanted to.
Yeah, saying that the future of religious studies is the hard sciences of religion? Studying religion specifically without having to need to ask people what they believe or not believe.
But I think that's the problem, is saying, is the future of religion one particular way of analyzing religion? And I think the answer to that is necessarily no. The future of religion is analyzing it in a multiplicity of ways.
So we've ended up talking about cognitive, like just pushing social science ends up that you're pushing, is a logical outcome of social science a sort of hard scientific approach? And by hard science I'm referring here to like sort of laboratory experiments.
But that means laboratory, just for those listening across the pond.
There's almost an assumption there that we're starting to presume that a rational, kind of quantifiable, scientific style of knowledge is the only way of accumulating knowledge. And actually, that takes us radically away from what's the subject we're talking about, which is religion, where you know, many people who are engaged in study of religion or even practicing religion themselves say actually there are alternative forms of knowledge than just, you know, these very scientific approaches, and you know, that's not the future of religious studies, and it can't be.
I mean, I said this earlier, but I'll say it now because I'm recording. To use the sort of Kuhnian idea paradigm, you can have a very scientific paradigm, and you can have a religious paradigm. So it's paradigms are ways of thinking, ways of approaching problems, and sometimes those two paradigms will not. It will be impossible for them to jump. And then, so you have someone who's strictly in a religious paradigm, somebody who's strictly in a, let's say, atheistic or something paradigm, and the point being that there are different discourses, and sometimes discourses are just incompatible. And if we try and even the adventure of studying religion social scientifically is the word there. So even if we're using a scientific methodology to approach religion, sometimes it means that we just won't be able to engage with a person who's on the other side, a person who is an insider. Even if the scholar is an insider, so say I'm a Jehovah's Witness, and I'm studying Jehovah's Witnesses, I may be applying social scientific methodology in my approach to that, application of that methodology, I completely alienate myself from my other fellow Jehovah's Witnesses, because that methodology is not the way things are being thought about.
I think this kind of follows on because it's about an insider-outsider thing and the idea of being relational to other people. And what I was going to say is that we're talking about social science, social being the kind of key word, and actually we're talking about quite individualistic research here. We're talking about a researcher talking to another individual, and actually religion is a very group social phenomenon to an extent. I mean, belief and religion are very different. And perhaps belief is the more individualist thing, but religion is actually perhaps something a little bit more social. And actually, what we're talking about when you talk about quantitative research and a sort of survey, and we focus very heavily on the survey, that's ticked by an individual who is perhaps trying to be honest to the social scientists, but also to their group. And I think that needs to be addressed a little bit as well, what we're talking about.
Okay.
We have come to a conclusion of sorts.
I think we've essentially come to what we always come to in these sort of discussions is that we all agree to disagree, or we all agree to disagree, and B, we demonstrated that everything is just vastly too complex for generalization.
I think to prove your point at the same time as disprove your point, I disagree with you on agreeing to disagree. I think we all agree to agree, to be honest. I think in this discussion is my sort of... Well, of course, Kevin doesn't because he's Kevin. But I think in the discussion we've had thus far, in my sort of prompting in a certain direction, is that the social sciences is sort of the broad definition we've had of it so far in the very beginning. We've sort of moved through that. Cognitive science as well as the differences between qualitative and quantitative sciences when it comes to studying religion, is that instead of disagreeing on all these different points, I think we all agree that there are different ways that we need to look at how we study religion. And it's not so much that one is right and one is wrong. It's that we have all these different perspectives that are just natural, that we're all going to have different perspectives. And that I can come along and say, I think that asking 200 people survey questions is not actually going to prove anything religiously. Someone can come along and say, well, actually, I don't think that's true. Here's my proof that that's not right. At the same time, I can say, well, if we theoretically look at religious ideologies, someone can come along and say, well, that's great. You theoretically looked at something. How do you prove that without having the data from this survey to back that up? So I think bridging off of what we said the last time of what is the future of religious studies to this of can we trust cognitive science or social sciences in the study of religion, for me, I think the answer is that yes, but at the same time, we need to cautiously go about it, as I think we always need to do when it comes to studying religion, because this is something that is extremely endearing to people, it's extremely important to people. And we need to be very careful in how we go about it. And I think we're doing that in sort of debating back and forth on what is and what isn't, what we think, what is and what isn't. Essentially, what we know and what we don't know.
Thank you to everyone for listening, whoever you are. And we'll bring you another one of these round tables at some point 4 or 5 weeks from now.